I did finally get a chance to see Lion's Ark and liked a lot of the stuff that you guys did, and so I have some questions here. The first is, how long have you been in this animal rescue business?
We've both been in this work for about 30 years.
Wow.
Started in slightly different ways. I got interested when someone gave me a leaflet in the street.
Uh-huh.
And it was about an experiment and about beagle dogs smoking cigarettes.
Right.
And really, I joined the organization then, and it's something that I did in my spare time, and then gradually I realized it was very important to protect animals and the environment, and that's really what got me involved.
Sure.
Our first really big international animal rescue, big exotic animals, was in 1990. We'd been involved with other groups exposing the circus in Africa, which was clearly a front for illegal trafficking. You know, it turned up in a country with chimpanzees and leave with African parents, and all of its paperwork was very suspicious, and it was sort of renowned as an animal trafficking ring. And this was before you really needed any coherent paperwork for an animal exhibition to travel across borders. And it ran out of money in Mozambique, and the animals were left to starve whilst the owner went and got more money, more funds back in Egypt, and
it's horrible.
So Jan and I flew out to Mozambique to see if we could negotiate seizing the circus, and we succeeded in getting the whole circus at the time, which was, I think, nine lions, three tigers, five horses, five dogs, and an African python, and rescued the whole lot to South Africa. So that kind of put us on this course of doing these very big-scale rescues related to kind of key issues, whether it was securing legislation or as in Lion Ark, enforcing the ban on circuses that we got there.
Right. Well, and that's what I wanted you to kind of walk me through a little bit. Watching the movie, you see all this take place, and I'm sure that the stages are, I guess the first thing you do, for instance, in Bolivia, when you discovered about these circuses and such, I guess the first thing you do is work with the government to get the legislation so you have some teeth behind you. Is that the first step?
Yes, absolutely. We start with gathering the evidence, as you saw, and then we release that to the public. Film and photographs, undercover work to show people what's happening behind the scenes.
Yeah.
The treatment of animals that they don't see. And then we release that to the media.
Sure.
The media is a very important part of this, making people aware. Also making governments aware of things that they may not be aware of. And so absolutely that next step is working with the government, working with members of Congress, advising them about what we see.
Yeah.
And advising them about the kind of legislation that other countries around the world are already introducing to limit or end the use of animals in traveling circuses.
Sure. And we want to warn people, too, that in Lion's Ark, you're going to see some of this footage, I guess, that was taken by your undercover people. You're going to see some pretty terrible abuses of animals at the hands of some of these owners.
Yeah. I mean, Jan and I have both worked undercover ourselves. And we both feel very strongly that if you're going to get laws protecting animals, you have to give people the facts and the evidence. And
yes.
We believe very much that most people will do the same thing if they see the evidence. Not necessarily quickly, not necessarily instantly, but that's for us to present it to them. And we very much believe that how vital it is, whether it's in Europe, America, or in South America, gather the evidence, present the facts, and get the public behind this.
Right.
You can't get something instantly without doing that. And so we both see really horrific things, and many people say to us, how can you witness these things? How can you see these things kind of stay sane.
Right.
And our entourage is key to changing things. But the worst thing is to know it's happening.
Right.
And have no proof. I guess in some ways we're like a detective or the police working on a case. When
mm-hmm.
they finally get that evidence, there's a sense of now we've got you. Or indeed with a journalist.
Right.
Now we've got you. Now we've got the facts. Now we can do something about it.
Yeah. And that public support is not only important to get this legislation passed, but for the funding, because this is not cheap, the work that you guys do. This is very costly.
That's right. You know, it's, most of our work is paid for by donations. Sometimes we'll get a grant from a foundation or a big donation from someone like Bob Barker, and that will enable something
right.
really big. Most of this rescue we're doing now is $10 donations.
Uh-huh.
They build up and they add up. And I had a supporter contact me who said at the beginning of this operation in Peru, she would commit $10 every time we save an animal.
Right.
So now she's donated over $700.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if lots of people do that, that adds up to the kind of money we need for travel crates, flights, looking after the animals.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, it really makes a difference. Sometimes people think, well, I can only give $5 or $10 or $20.
Right.
Give what you can. It really will make a difference with us.
Mm-hmm. Now, after you've gotten this public support and you've gotten the legislation, then the next step is, as we see in this documentary, you guys are tracking down these circuses. So tell me, how is it you find these? How do you find where they're at? Who has these animals? Because it seems like, at least when I watched the documentary, that you had a lot of advanced information before you got to the circus. So how do you get all that?
Absolutely. Well, it's really like we have to send out the investigation team again.
Yeah.
A slightly different type of investigation. And what happens usually is most governments, when they ban the use of wild animals in circuses, they give the circuses a period of time
right.
to either sell their animals or give them away to zoos, usually 2 years or 1 year or 2 years. Some give them quite a long time, several years.
Oh.
And what we say to the government is as soon as that deadline is up
mm-hmm.
and you've got circuses who are now keeping their animals illegally, we will help you to enforce.
Right.
And we start that enforcement by doing what we call a census, which is we send out our guys again. They spread all over the country, find all the circuses. We use our networks of members of the public telling us where they've seen a circus with animals.
Okay.
And find the circus, film and photograph what animals they've got. We might talk to the circus, find out how many animals they have, what species, where they go, where they're going, and in the next few weeks. And we also cross-check that with any information the government might have, like if they issue circuses with transit permits,
right.
allow them to take animals from one region to another,
mm-hmm.
one state to another.
Right.
And so we cross-check all of that information with our information on what we've actually seen. And we put together a pattern of who the circuses are, what animals they have, who owns the animals, who owns the circus, and also the routes that the circus usually takes.
Right.
And then piecing all that together, we pretty much know where the circuses are going to be. And that's when we can say to the government, wildlife people, well, okay, these are the circuses
mm-hmm.
that are now illegal.
Right.
This is the animals they have. These are the places they are. And that's when they can swoop in with the police and the wildlife officials.
Right.
And we go with them and we say to them, you deal with the seizure and we'll take the animals.
Well, yeah, because that was my next question, is that some of these confrontations were not very peaceful. These people are not willing to give up these animals. So when you approach these, what kind of backup from the government do you have in case these people are prepared to fight to keep them?
Well, it's very variable. I mean, I think Lionel captures a sort of very honest picture of how these just go, which are some people burst into tears, some people isolate some people that are sort of very threatening at first and then actually end up helping us. And others, it's a pretty fierce confrontation. And there's one scene in the film where it's very dramatic and it's very confrontational.
Doesn't the one guy slash your tires?
Yeah, the guy slashes the tires, they're shouting, they're shoving. And we capture in the film, I think it's about 12 minutes, maybe 15 minutes.
Yeah.
That confrontation went on for hours. It began in the morning and it finished pretty much at sundown. And, it would sort of go peace first, and then there would be another story. And we were trying to fix the tires, and they were trying to steal the bolts. Wheels back on with to make it impossible to repair it.
Yeah.
And so it's very variable. The police were fairly low-key. The officials and the police kind of did their job.
Right.
And we as an ADI team, we aim to sort of look as authoritative as possible. We stay calm. We don't respond to the provocation.
Right.
If we're pushed, we'll sort of stand firm.
Uh-huh.
And those things, we sort of dress smart, we make sure all of our team are clearly identified as ADI personnel, and they get their heads down, they do their jobs. There's a line in it where Jan says, after the one where the guy slashed the tires, and each Jan says, okay, everybody, just get your head down, do your job, we're not going to have any confrontations today, no slashing tires.
And then you saved how many animals in the Lions Ark project?
That was 25 African lions.
Mm-hmm.
We took to the U.S. And in an earlier part of the project, we also rescued a circus baboon that had been performing with lions.
Right.
And there was four other lions with him. They went to another sanctuary in the U.S., but the baboon... we couldn't get into the U.S. They don't allow primates in, so we took him to England, where we found him actually a friend, a female baboon, another hamadryas baboon, same as him. That had also had a happy ending.
Yeah, well, they do. And there must be an incredible emotional rush when you're there with these rescued animals and you've rescued them. Tell me a little bit about how that feels.
When you get very attached to them, and although I always say to myself, to try not to get too attached, but you do. They become part of your family.
Yeah.
And you wake up every day thinking about them, and you get so close to them, and you get to know them as individuals, and you get to know their personalities.
Mm-hmm.
And also you're investing a lot of emotion into making sure they're safe.
Yeah.
Ensure they get to a new life. So it is a very emotional moment when you finally, we're effectively foster parents.
Yeah.
And we have to hand our babies over to someone else so that we can move on to the next ones who need our help.
Yes.
And so you do get very emotional about it.
I'll bet. And I'm told you're in Peru now rescuing animals. Is that correct?
We are. And, another group of really beautiful animals, and they've suffered so much.
Yeah.
In fact, just today, we had to do an ultrasound on one of the lionesses because during a check, one of the vets noticed a lump, a mass in her abdomen, and we couldn't quite feel what it was.
Right.
But she also had broken teeth.
Oh.
And she had a lot of gum disease, and she was having trouble eating. Today we sedated her and we did an ultrasound, and we know she has damaged kidneys from the ultrasound. We're just waiting for the full report.
Wow.
And also the dentist had to take out a lot of the infection out of the teeth. He pulled out a lot of the bad teeth. He took out two teeth, which were already loose, and she must have been in a lot of pain. And her name's Lunica. And she's 13 years old. She's possibly the mother
of
the other two females that she came with just a couple of weeks ago. And so many of them, we've had to do a lot more and especially death work.
Yeah.
And we've had to do before. We've had a number of animals. Tenley, the spider monkey, he had to have his teeth done.
Mm.
And there's been about five other monkeys with broken teeth. What they do with the baby monkeys is they get them as babies and then they snap off their teeth.
Oh,
and
why?
So that they can't bite.
Yeah, why would they do that?
So the teeth become, it's horrific. Huh. It's absolutely horrific. And it's so that the animals can't defend themselves.
Oh.
And so the teeth become infected and they live all of their lives with toothache and with infected teeth. And one of the worst cases we had, another monkey who had actually four holes in his face.
Wow.
Where the infection was so bad that it had burst out through the bone, into deep through the bone. He had two holes underneath his chin.
Wow.
And two holes just under his eyes. And we've had a various degrees of that kind of terrible infection in the lions, as well as in the monkeys. One of the lions, Junior, again with him, the infection in his teeth had eaten through the bone of his face and had come out as an abscess in his face. He was in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
And we've dealt with all this. We've had a specialist come from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Foundation. He came last September, and he came just a couple of weeks ago to deal with all the new cases.
Yeah.
And he did lots of mending of teeth and root canals and everything to get rid of the infection.
Yeah.
In the animals' faces. And then he's going to have a lot more to do. Some of them he had to just patch them up, do temporary holes, temporary root canals until he can get them to the U.S. And then do have more facilities there. To do a complete job on some of them.
And these animals basically are going to need care for...
They are beautiful.
Yeah, and they're going to need care for the rest of their lives.
Absolutely. They're going to go into the Wild Animal Sanctuary and they're going to be looked after for the rest of their lives. Mm. They're going to enjoy a freedom they have never felt before.
Yeah.
These are animals who've lived all of their lives in tiny cages.
Yeah.
And some of them have never left those cages and were actually afraid to leave them. When we take them into our temporary rescue centre, we give them more space.
Right.
We give them hay and logs and toys and tires and things to play
sure.
with. We give them big balls of catnip in straw wrapped up in banana leaves for
That's
them to
great.
Play with. And, they love footballs.
Yeah.
We push footballs in there and they knock them around the cage and then they kill them. Very quickly.
Sure.
But it's all to keep them happy and engaged and get them to use their muscles. And
right.
So they can get to the sanctuary.
So these...
It's very rewarding to see how much they enjoy life.
Yeah, I'm sure of that. And these lions now that are in Colorado that you rescued in Bolivia on the documentary we saw, can you give us an update on how they're all doing now?
They've done fantastically. It's a wonderful sanctuary, the Wild Animal Sanctuary.
Yeah.
It has these big, large acreage habitats that you see in the film.
Yeah, you can see it in the film, yeah.
The film kind of covers not only a sort of unique approach to animal rescue, a kind of groundbreaking, but also setting a standard on how big cats should live in captivity. You know, many animals are stuck in captivity.
Right.
And the Wild Animal Sanctuary is a great example. And during the film, we saw how we rescued from three different circuses.
Yes.
Kenya, who was living in this kind of small box on wheels. You know, the owner said to us, put her in there, and she got so big I could never let her out. Like a cupboard on wheels.
Wow.
And then there was the two male lions, Pancho and Tomuco, and they were living in this sort of bare box together. And there was also Zara and Delila, who were from another circus, two lionesses.
Mm-hmm.
Now those five lions, came from all corners of this great big country,
right,
are all now living together as one pride in about 14 acres of space at the Wild Animal Sanctuary.
It's fantastic.
And Colo Colo, who I kind of consider the star of the firm, we were making the firm, and we were in production in the theater, we were filming, and I would say to the camera people, film every line, every day.
Yeah.
You never know what will emerge as the big story, you know, if one of them gets injured or one of them dies, then
sure,
we'll be telling that story.
Yeah.
And because it was 25 lines, we couldn't follow every animal in minute detail.
Right.
The film would be about 2 days long.
Yeah.
But Colo Colo, this incredibly angry, defiant lion, emerged once we were editing as the kind of complete star. This lion who was in pain,
right,
who had been in this dreadful cage for 12 years, who was utterly defiant. There was something in his resilience and his rage at the way he'd been treated.
Mm-hmm.
It really touched everybody. All the people like Jan and I, who
were
trying to attack, we sort of came to admire this lion.
Sure.
And he just found peace. You know, you see that at the end of the film, and that has continued.
Right.
He is just calm now and settled and content. He is the master of all these surveillance.
Well, it sounds like you guys did a tremendous service, and I assume that there's more to come.
Yeah, there certainly is. I mean, this rescue is Bolivia. I mean, we've got 80 animals in our care, 70 animals in our care right now.
Wow.
We're relocating. I mean, in Bolivia, we relocated many monkeys and horses and other animals.
Sure.
This operation has been tough. It will have either finished. It will have been a year end-to-end, constantly tracking down surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
With them going underground, then they'd reappear. I mean, just 4 weeks ago, we discovered a circus from someone contacted us on social media and said,
wow, that's great.
The circus has just turned up in town.
So will we see any, will we see any of these new rescues on a documentary?
Yeah, well, we're looking at how we might present it this time. We're filming everything. We don't really want to make Lion Art 2.
Right.
But we want to do something different, perhaps, either in documentary form or perhaps in TV series form,
yeah,
where you can see perhaps a little bit more of the detail. What does it take to kind of rebuild these animals' lives?
And yeah.
What's it like for us on the ground day to day?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of living out of suitcases, trying to cope with being in the field for a year.
Sure. I look forward to seeing whatever version you guys decide to extend this to us. And of course, Lion's Ark is out. It's definitely worthwhile. People should take a look because you just don't believe some of this is happening until you see it with your own eyes.
Well, we wanted to make a film that people would enjoy watching. You know,
right.
A bit of smile on their face, because traditionally, animal protection or environment documentaries,
yeah,
they tend to be pretty punishing affairs.
You right.
Know, you know, they're important. And we felt we got this unique opportunity to tell the lion story, but not pull the punches,
right,
and let these animals go through, but end with a happy ending. And that has really resonated with people at film festivals and other screenings. So hopefully people will enjoy it. There are laugh out loud moments in it, again, which is a bit rare for this kind of documentary.
Yeah.
Enjoy the film and understand the issue.
Well, I hope people will, and congratulations on your successes, and I wish the best of luck to you. I want to appreciate you taking the time from your important work to tell us about Lion's Ark and to get the word out.
Thank you very much indeed. We appreciate, you know, you've been interested in the film and our work.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Take care.